Let's talk about UniExpress.
Let's talk about the fact that I can't do the last layer of that Rubik's Cube. Like, the first two layers, it's fine. And then I get to the last layer, just one more layer done, I have no clue what to do, you know?
What do you need done here?
Clearly, it's not solved!
Alright.
You can see that it's not solved. That's what still needs to be done,
yeah,
the part that's not solved
yet. Yeah, because you don't have the yellow side here.
Yes.
That would solve it. I'm pretty sure that would solve it.
You have very, very correctly observed that if I had the last layer, it would all be solved. That's why I call it the last layer, because I've already done all
I
the other ones.
I don't understand you, Wave.
Are these observations, conclusions, what are statements, questions?
Clearly you just need to...
solve it, yeah.
rearrange these...
just take it out, put it back in...
It's like you go to a website where it explains how to solve the cube, and you're like, clearly you have to rearrange them to get it to be solved.
You went on a website and solved it like that. It's like,
no, I can get that. I can get two layers without having to go to a website or without having to like go to any resources, but I can't do the last layer.
Which is the hardest one?
I just forgot it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Forgot how to do it. Hello and welcome to Red Switch, the podcast. My name is Bartholomew, and I am here with Suresh.
Hey.
Adanya.
Hey.
And Oiva.
Moi.
And we'll see how this goes, but hopefully this will be our first episode, and the way I thought we should go about that is that we should somewhat try to introduce ourselves in some way. And so I went about thinking, how would I introduce myself? Or what is it about me that people should know? And very quickly, I start thinking way too deep and philosophical and thinking like, what does it mean to be a person? What is identity? And I went along this road and I sort of started thinking like, the way I thought I was 3 years ago, parts of that have changed. Like, the way I think about myself now, I've got several things that are inherently me that weren't inherently me before. Like, I'm now inherently a student at work, and I'm someone that studies maths, and I'm somehow interested in maths, whilst if I look 2 years back, I had almost no actual interest in maths whatsoever. That all came as a consequence of doing a bit meh in 1 year of studying and not getting where I wanted to go. I was like, maybe I should try something different. And then I tried to do maths, and so for 1 year I started getting into maths, and then I applied and I did maths and computer science as a study, and now I'm here. So the reason why I'm here is not something that was being like a long time coming, that was part of who I am. It's just like the last 2 years have really gotten me towards this point. And I think that's kind of interesting. Were you always kind of going to be an engineer, or
yep,
always going to do that?
Well, my mum was like, that was all you're going to become. Because when I was, like, really young, I just, like, mucked around, like, electronics and shit and, like, built cameras and radios and just random electronic kits I just had. I just messed with them. As I grew up, I was like, well, this is basically what I want to do, something sciencey. And, like engineering was basically right up my alley. I was like, oh, what do I want to do? Well, this is all I've done most of my life, so that's basically where I was going to go. So I think I already knew what I was going to do from, like, a young age. And then this is just how I thought it would turn out.
Did you take things apart?
Yep, all the time.
Yeah.
And I couldn't put them back together.
Yeah, I had sick. That. At first I was a bit interested in, like, maybe doing engineering or whatever. But I stopped with that interest when I realised that everything I've ever taken apart, I've never been able to put back together correctly. So, like, one day my mum was like, oh, yeah, here's like, the old laptop I used to use. 3 hours later, I've completely demolished it. So any shred of, like, potential to turn on that laptop and look at how, like, she originally did her work. No, here's the display, have that. Here, have one of the keys, this is the space bar. Like, I've ruined people's lives, especially my parents.
I get it from my dad, because he's like, he thinks he's a handyman, right? So he'll go around the house like, oh, we need this, like, some things might not be, like, completely broken, but it's like, they're not working, like, as best as they can. He's like, yeah, I'll fix this. And he just walks over and he, like, undoes it, and then he completely fucks it up. And then he's like, oh crap. And he asks me to come over. He's like, can you have a look at this? And like, he's like, this is like a lock. And I'm like, I've never looked at a lock before in my life and know how to put it back together. I'm like, well, you're completely taking everything out. I don't know how it used to look at all. And he's like, try to do something. And then we just, we're left with like a door with no lock for like 2 weeks until he like gives up on his pride. And he's like, all right, we'll just call someone else to do it. Just every time. And I'm pretty sure that's where my interest in like taking stuff apart, because he's just like, well, come here, let's just take this apart. I'm like, yeah, why not? And it's just every time.
So, that's yeah. Wonderful.
So, what about you, mate?
Me? Yeah. I wanted to do maths pretty early on, I'd say probably like as early as you could probably think.
About wanting to do maths?
Yeah. So, I was born in other maths. No, I didn't. Probably early on, like year 7, year 8.
At 4 months, he could already do the number scale. When everyone's like, yeah, my kid can already do the, like, know alphabet and can kind of read already. You were like, numbers. I only care about numbers.
No, it wasn't that. I knew that to do maths at uni, I had to be good at everything because of the requirements. I couldn't be just good at maths. So I did everything. But I just knew that I wanted to do maths.
With you mean like everything scientific or?
No, generally everything.
Because you don't really have to do essays.
I know, but to do maths. Well, actually, there's a lot of written essay work, especially like third year. There is a module where 50, which will mean that 50% of your degree in the third year will just be essays. And the proofs we're writing are pretty much essays at the moment. I mean, you know.
So. Yeah, there is definitely like an introduction.
And then, obviously, like, a plot it's not twist essay, so there won't through, be like.
Yes, plot
the,
twists.
The plot thickens as we have alpha and beta that might or might not be equal.
Yeah, but to apply to a top university...
We'll come back after the break.
To apply to a top university, they'll look at your GCSEs, they'll look at your A2s and ASs, yeah. And they'll look at the fact that in GCSEs you'll have to do English and, you know, different subjects, and you have to be a well-rounded person for most universities, so you can't just be good at maths, I don't think. Even though a lot of people are. But yeah, I wanted to do maths pretty early on. There was no like real reason behind it. I think it's a degree where main reason probably was because I didn't really know what I wanted to do. So maths was the best sort of thing to get me into most basically anything. You know, I can go into research in maths itself, any science, I can go into sort of economics, any social science, because it's logical thinking. You know, it's abstract thinking, and that's why I wanted to do it.
Okay,
and we're slightly. Making a step here where we're assuming that the thing that we associate with who we are is our degree.
Yeah.
And that might not be the case. Like, I immediately asked you whether you're destined to be an engineer or whether that was the main thing in your mind. Now, that's me assuming that you're sort of part of what makes you is being an engineer, and that might be completely wrong.
So. Yeah, a lot of people do stuff just because they've been told to do it, let's be honest.
But also, so many people are doing a course and they would say, like, they're interested in the course or whatever, but it's not their main thing. That's not who they are. Yeah,
of course. And then.
So, would you say that, you know, if someone comes up to you and says, like, okay, you've got 5 minutes to explain to me who you are,
you know,
is engineering the thing that comes up?
Yeah, definitely.
Really?
Yeah.
You have to for us.
Yeah, it's just like, who do you are? It's like, when people ask who I am, I just normally go off with what I do. Type of thing. Is this who I am? Like, I do this, and I study this, and I enjoy this.
Isn't it correct, like, leftist, communist, socialist way of thinking, isn't it?
Stop identifying me with your socialism.
No, I think you're if you define yourself by your produce, then you are...
Not my produce, it's more like what I enjoy doing. What I enjoy doing is what I've... sort of connected with my degree is what I enjoy doing is why I did it. I could have gone for money or something, but I just started to go with what I'm doing. So it's easy for me to find myself with my degree. It's because that's generally what I like to do. I enjoy, because I'm doing science as well, I enjoy physics, I enjoy maths, and I enjoy engineering. These are the three things that I've always wanted to do and always wanted to be a part of, so.
What do you mean with it being a socialist wave of...
No, that's just something that came up into my mind since... I heard this opinion somewhere. It was in my textbook, high school textbook.
Well, if I asked you, Oliver, how would you... What was the question?
If someone would come up to you, Oliver, and say, were you always destined to become a philosopher? Would you say yes? Would you say, like, when was it apparent to you that you wanted to do philosophy or literature, which you're doing?
Well, I just recently heard this very, very nice quote, just, I think, yesterday. Philosophy is like wanting to have the feeling of being home everywhere. So if I think of it that way, or, like, resonating to that, am I destined to never be at home? Am I destined to look my home everywhere? Am I destined to try and feel comfortable in every situation, every place, every time? Then yes, I'd say I do want to be comfortable. I do want to feel content. I do want to say that this place, this world, this earth, these people, they're my family. This is my home. This is where I belong. Yes, then definitely I did. Destined to be a philosopher.
It's that's interesting, but I want you to go a bit more in depth with what do you mean with wanting to feel at home everywhere? What's the feeling you get when you feel at home? This kind of comfort or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And why is it? And how do you get that where in a place where you're not at home? And what? How does that relate to philosophy? Most importantly, because the way I think of philosophy, it's something where, in any situation, you might want to attempt to deconstruct what's happening mm-hmm. and understand the stuff around you, and hopefully try and get sort of further in an intellectual or aspirational means of understanding more holistically and more fully what's happening. But I wouldn't necessarily equate that to comfort.
Mm-hmm. Knowledge, you kind of went into two paths there. You said something along like being critical or analytical, and then as well as holistic. No, that's just one side of philosophy. I'm rather in the school that wants to take something out of philosophy and always have that reference point on my feet, or like on the ground, on my own life. I don't want to be impartial. I want to, that's the sort of the comfort. Like I always want to keep my make it maybe psyche like.
Kind of want to stay down to earth.
Yes.
Really, yeah. And do you think becoming kind of analytical or impartial is sort of going away from that?
No, I didn't say that. That's just something else. Like analytical or being critical about stuff is more about coming up with like conceptualizing stuff and then breaking those, deconstructing those concepts. But you don't really need that if you want to just stay on the ground.
I might just derail the topic because I just had something that just popped in my head.
Go for it.
I thought it was just funny. Like, if you had a crime that you wanted to commit, just say like robbing a bank or something, like just any crime, how would you get away with it? Let's say robbing a bank. If you wanted to rob a bank.
Some sort of a thought experiment.
Just curious. Like, how would you successfully go into a bank, rob the bank, take everything that's like from the till or maybe into like the actual where their money's kept, take it all and then leave without them ever being able to catch you? And this is even, like, you can betray people, though.
Betray?
You can betray people. So that's like, anyway, but you can't get caught and you have to have a good portion of the money.
No, but
have you watched the film The Town?
The Town? No, I haven't seen that.
It's got, what's his name?
Not you. You have to do this yourself, by yourself.
No, but you've got to get ideas from somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Have you seen the film? Basically, The Town has, well, what's his name? The guy in Pearl Harbor. The guy in Pearl Harbor. Who acted in the guy in Pearl Harbor? The, what's his name?
I'm not.
He was also in, he was like this, a friend of Matt Damon in Good Will Hunting.
Oh,
what's his name?
Ben Affleck.
Ben Affleck, he's in that film.
Yeah.
And basically the town is, they basically a bank, you know, they do bank robberies. And I think the main thing, what they did, and what you'd have to do if you're a bank, you know, you'd have to know everyone in that area and community, and you have to gain their trust. Because that's what they did. You have to have people on the inside. You can't just run in and...
Yeah.
And, you know.
You have to know, like, how the security...
Yeah, you'll have to have, like... For example, the first thing you have to do with modern technology, you'll leave some DNA behind, so you'll probably have to, like, you know, put a lot of chemicals that will, you know, get rid of that.
Yeah,
To get out, you'll have to take someone hostage to actually get out that area. Mm. And you'll have to run as far as you can. A bank robbery itself will not be too bad, because if you have a gun or something, you can point it at someone's face and they can, like, open the lock up, you make the money.
Yeah.
And you probably can't do it by yourself, because it's quite difficult, so you probably have to about three or four other guys.
But a lot of those banks have, like, time delays and stuff in their locks.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just, give me the money and that's it. It's like, you have to wait, like, a
couple
hours.
But they also have the fact that they put paint in the bags when they give you the money. They have money that ends up having sort of blood bombs, which is just red paint that, once it's in the bag, it will start seeping into all of the money, so all of the money will have some kind of red paint on it, which means it's all tagged and identified as being stolen money, and so they can track it back to you. So as soon as you do have... If you're dealing with paper money, they have these techniques of, you know, they'll all... Or most of it will... You can't spend it. Because anywhere you spend it, people will know that you've stolen the money and they'll be able to track it back to you.
Wow, okay.
That's the tricky part.
Yeah. But with the bank robbery thing, I'd say... You can't do it by yourself. It's gonna be or maybe not. You can't. But you it's difficult to do it by yourself. So you'll have to have, like, trusted sort of people on the inside. Trust the people that you'll go in with, and you probably split the money.
Yeah, I think you need, like, a lot of equipment as well.
You probably need, like, a van that will just be, like, around the bank itself, and someone lets you in, and you just, and it'll have to be, like, a quick sort of, everyone get, like, 5-6 of you just break into the bank, get behind the counter, and, like, shut off the doors around it, take a few people hostage, because you'll only get back out when the police surrounds the whole thing.
Jeez.
And you have to, the escape plan will probably be the most important thing. You'll have to have a plan A, B, C, D, because a lot of things can go wrong.
Yeah, that's so true, man. Too hard. Actually, I wouldn't have a clue on how to actually pull it off successfully.
Well, this is like bank robbery. What about any crime itself? I think you'll have to have, like...
Dude, like, if you want to commit, like, a crime, just, like, going to a store and just robbing it, it's easy. Just put a mask on, have a gun, give me your money. And just...
One of my people I knew in high school, he tried to rob a store with a brick.
How did
it go? Well, quite clearly, the guy gave him the money, like, but the problem was, he had, like, a thing on, and the guy knew exactly who the kid was because he's come to the store all the time. He just called his parents and asked for the stuff back. But, yeah, there are idiots in this world that literally just go in without a plan. I mean, a brick.
No, but also going to a store that you go to frequently.
Yeah, that's so dumb.
That's terrible.
If I was
to
do it,
stupid.
I would definitely go to, like, some place I would never go to again.
Should we talk about something else, man?
Yeah. I'm just talking about crap that's happened to me or I've seen just...
Please tell us, yes.
Okay.
I want to know all the crap that's happened.
Yesterday,
to you.
I was chilling with Skylar.
Yeah.
Who's that?
Yeah, it's one of my female friends from Australia.
Female friends.
Ew.
Why don't you just...
female!
Shut up. Anyway,
I was more like, ew, Australia.
Why not just...
A female...
Just say friend.
Yeah.
Well, you just
because this leads up to the story.
It's necessary to know that she's female.
Yeah.
Can I just ask a question?
Go.
Were you drinking Fosters?
Fuck you, dude.
If you were, this is not a situation I want to know about. This is not...
I'll just stop.
This story up because you weren't...
But yes, anyway, there was this dude that she was talking to.
Was it you?
Go.
Was she drinking Fosters with him?
Was the dude she was talking to drinking Fosters?
Yes.
Was the dude trying to sell her Fosters?
Yes.
She said no, and you were like, "What? You're Australian. Why don't you want to buy it?"
You were in a bar, Fosters bar.
And then they just call it a bar. Every bar only sells Fosters.
Oh.
You just
every shop is a bar.
Yeah.
Because it, you know, every shop sells Fosters. So.
No, carry on. The story. We're just gonna assume that there's Fosters there.
Okay. I'm just gonna let you always happen. Anyway, there's this dude.
With Fosters.
There's this dude.
He had foster parents and they were drinking
Fosters.
No, sorry.
There's this dude that we met last term, I think.
he was trying to find Fosters.
Oh my god.
We just call him Fosters.
For this, we'll just call him Fosters, okay?
Yeah.
Great. Right, so his name's Fosters.
It's Fosters.
I'm done. Fuck you guys.
I want to hear the story.
I don't want to tell it. Fuck you.
No, just tell
him. He doesn't want to tell because instead he prefers to be doing something else.
Go on, tell us, go on.
Okay, and I've lost my...
Alright, the dude and she's talking to.
Oh, yeah. Alright, so, like, she had a birthday about a week ago. And this dude was like, happy birthday. She had never spoken to this guy before. We just met him at, like, a pre-drinks, and then he added, like...
It was his birthday.
No, this is, like, a long... Right, so I'll start at the start. So, we met this guy at the pre-drinks. Well, yeah. I met him, but he didn't really talk to her. And then he's, like... when it hit her birthday, he just wished her a happy birthday through Facebook message. And she barely knew this guy at all. And then he's like, they were just talking for a bit. And he's like, she's like, yeah, we should all catch up after a while. He's like, yeah, we should catch up in private with some Irish whiskey. And she's like, no, we should invite everyone. He's like, I don't have much whiskey. It should just be us. And she's like, I don't know how to tell this guy without, like, hurting him, how to reject him. And I was like, if it was you guys and you just, you were just like, you said it as a private thing, even though no one in there like, might should. And then she's like, no, would you take that as a rejection?
Yeah. That is rejection.
I was like,
no. But no, first of all, it's just like, it's not very stylish. It's not a nice proposition. Going from, yeah, we should meet up. In private.
also the fact how unclassy of him not to offer a Foster's and offer Irish whiskey.
No, the thing wrong with this proposition was that she was like, oh, Irish whiskey, I prefer Foster's. He should have offered in private with Foster's. It's fine.
Yeah.
It'll work.
Because that's not in private, because that's just like, you know, a couple
So Foster's is a person, so it's with Foster's.
So when do you guys draw the line? When do you stop chasing?
Chasing.
Back in your day.
Back in my day.
Yeah.
Don't chase. I think that's easy.
I don't know. You've got a bit of I'm not speaking from experience, but I do think, like, if you're faced with a bit of rejection, there's reason to believe, like, okay, maybe I should just go at it from a different angle. But he's just... There's so many clear things that he faced rejection.
What about this?
He faced rejection.
Yeah.
Because she barely knew him.
Yeah.
And
he was
saying stuff over Messenger. So there's no like body language, there's no way
social
of communicating
media
whether
really taken out like that kind of sort of
I said to her that this guy probably just wants sex. From what I thought. What do you guys think of that?
I don't know. I mean he won't get it up with Irish whiskey, let's be honest. That's how strong it is.
I had this moment yesterday when I was in an exam and I was like really concentrating and everything, and as soon as one of the other exams that were happening in the hall were going to be terminated, there was this woman that would go over the intercom and say it really slowly, and it was quite comical because I just couldn't take some of the exams seriously. One of them was painting styles. I was like, come on, is that really like... Before going into the exam, we sort of, some of the students that in my course were kind of saying like, oh, I much prefer doing that exam, that's so much more easy. And I was like, no, it's not. Clearly not. And then, in the exam, I'm like, okay, maybe that is easier than, like, I had to kind of change my opinion there from defending other courses to thinking that, you know, maybe I could do a bit of painting styles. I could answer more than I'm answering in this exam. And I don't know if that's because I think that subject is easier or if I'm just clearly very unprepared for my own subject to begin with.
Well,
and there, that, because of that reason.
From the top,
like,
of your head, can you list any painting styles?
Cubism?
Avant-garde?
I'm just gonna call everything avant-garde.
What's avant-garde?
Isn't that like, ooh, a bit challenging?
Yeah. Ooh, that's a bit quirky. Yeah, use the word. Basically, if you've got like a hipster style, you can do painting, let's be honest. Yeah, painting has now gone like away from the sort of the actual art itself, but to basically. Like that guy that just had the canvas without anything. I mean, that's not style, is it? It's like me shitting on a canvas, scraping away that thing. I should call this skidmark.
When I think about people like Albert Einstein and some like extremely intelligent intellectuals that have done a lot, for example, in science or whatever, I usually don't think of them as being quite social. Sort of, Maybe this is just like a stereotype thing that isn't really grounded that I have. But my main idea is that a lot of these intellects just spend a lot of time thinking and not much time socializing. And that's... I don't know.
I'm against that. And because I usually think that way until one of my physics lecturers is like, that's not true. Because, you know Schrodinger? Anyone know the famous physicist Schrodinger? The guy's like...
Schrodinger.
Sorry, my pronunciation.
Piece of shit, a screaming guy. Can't even pronounce it correctly.
Fuck yourself.
No, they call him that in Australia.
They call him Foster.
Yeah.
Fuck off. There's this other guy called Max Born who did similar work to him. And apparently he was like the most social guy ever. Well, not the most social guy, but like...
The most social guy ever.
Yeah, party!
Confirmed, he won several Most Social Guy awards.
Like, he was like Nintendo, the most social guy.
They actually call it the most... What's his name? The most social guy ever. Oh my god.
What, like, the most social guy. Rest in peace here.
Fuck you guys and this podcast.
Alright, so back to the point. I believe... Just gonna say this to everyone. This is, what's his name? I believe Jose Mourinho is now the manager of Manchester United.
What the fuck is Manchester United?
Oh my god!
It's probably the biggest one of the biggest football teams in the planet.
Have you guys ever heard of Finland?
Finland.
I've never heard of it.
Yeah, but Man United is pretty big. So yeah, this.
Is that the one that Van Gaal was?
Yeah, Van Gaal.
Van Gaal.
Yeah, he was the manager.
But, yeah. Did you try to choke yourself or something? What was that?
Well, I'm trying to say Van Gaal.
Van Gaal.
But anyway, yeah, so he's. I believe the rumours coming through that he's signed the deal.
Mm-hmm.
So it happened during our podcast.
Why was Van Gaal thrown out to begin with?
I think
why was he
in terms of any industry, in sport industry, in the music industry, you know, when you have success... So you get a name for yourself. So, like, I'm going to talk about the sport industry in particular. So a manager of any sports team is very important. In fact, in any corporate world, the manager that runs the team is probably the most important cop that, like, you know, motivates the team, gives them has the strategic input. So Van Gaal is a very good sort of, in terms of football managing, he's a very sort of, he brings the youth players through quite a lot. Just to clarify, Oliver has just walked out of the podcast.
Yeah, without any like explanation, he just stood up.
Do you want to close that blunt? The imaging,
The manager is the guy that sort of, you know, controls the thing, controls the team, and he's a manager that was not very successful, and he did not meet his goals for the season. Goals. So they just brought in probably the biggest name manager on the planet, who is probably the most successful manager.
Who's the He
managed Chelsea.
Are you just going to eat some raw chicken?
Yeah, he managed Chelsea twice. He's only been sacked twice in his career, and that was both from Chelsea.
Right, so they took him back and they sacked him again.
Why? Because he took us as champions to near relegation.
Oh,
yeah.
Shit.
One of the negatives of Mourinho is he does not bring in young players. He's very, very... He is a born winner, where he will do anything to win. Poke people's eyes... You know, call referees, you know, make... He basically wants the players to think everyone's against them. So that drives the players on. Because if you think that... The players think that every team wants them to lose, they want to prove them wrong. Which works for like two, three years. So Mourinho's a manager that worked brilliantly when he initially comes in. Or he gets the players hungry where the players think, you know, I want to prove everyone wrong.
Yeah.
But after 2-3 years...
But come on, the people who are on the team, they've been there for a while, so obviously they see this coming. Like, nobody will be like...
No. Suddenly I need to put everything into this. Yeah, but that's the thing. You see that in the corporate world when you have a team where that they've got a talented team but they're not producing the numbers.
Yep, yep.
When a manager comes in and really rustles their
family. Actually, I've heard that like a good manager like can make a shit team like awesome.
Yeah, because if you get everything out of it, so yeah, you can like you think that, you know, oh, why don't they just perform all the time? They can't be asked.
Who was the guy that was like, I made this average team of players great? Who's like one of the best managers? What is his name?
What's that team you were talking about where they play extremely defensively? They play like one goal
Yeah.
And as soon as they got that,
yeah,
they're so defensive.
Basically, there's a team called Atletico Madrid that have... Every team has a budget. So, like, you know, Atletico Madrid, they're with Barcelona and Real Madrid, who have about 10 times the budget that team has. So the manager of Atletico Madrid says, you know what, I'm not going to play football with these guys. I'm not going to try and play attacking football. What I'm going to do is I'm going to defend, score a goal, and then just defend and just keep kicking the ball out. So I'm going to have my team that just works really hard. So basically what happens is when there's a superstar in Atletico Madrid, so their best player normally gets sold because he doesn't want a player to think that he's the best player, so he doesn't have to put in the effort for the team.
Yes.
So rather interestingly, he changes the players a lot when he thinks that these players are too good for the team almost.
Yeah.
Whereas most managers think we need to keep all our good players. He's like, get rid of them, get another one, and that works. That wants to prove themselves.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Very cool.
That reminds me of this documentary I was watching about a guy who's a chef. I forgot his name for now, but I'll come up with it at some point. But his philosophy was really interesting about how he works. So he works in a small group with a few other chefs trying to do some like outdoor cooking and trying to do something with very minimal materials. And so he has open fires, he builds the fireplaces and all of the equipment, and then he goes and gets the entire carcass of an animal, and he cooks the entire thing, and he does everything in a really natural, really beautiful way. And the way it happens is they're so focused on sort of aspiring to excellence or aspiring to getting the perfect dish and the perfect meal. And he mentioned something, and that reminds me, that's what reminded me of this, where as soon as one of the partners he's working with is satisfied with the result, he moves on.
Yeah.
He says, like, okay, you're satisfied, that's not what I want.
Exactly.
As soon as you're satisfied, you're no longer going to try and perform anymore. And so he's going to continue being slightly unsatisfied, always wanting a bit better. And as soon as he finds himself with people that, as a result, are satisfied with the product, he's like, okay, that's it. Now I have to move on and find other people.
Rather interesting. That works a lot. But, you know, a great manager for a team might be not the right manager for another team. So if a manager, for example, this manager, who's a manager of Atletico Madrid, gets rid of any player that is the superstar, if he, like, was a manager of a team that was full of incredible players, he might not do very well, because a player that's amazing will not want to work back all the time and try hard for the team, because he's like, well, I've got my talent. So let's say if you've got a manager of a very small company and he's like works with minimal sort of things, minimal ingredients, minimal budget, he might not be the best manager to have in a big major corporation that has a lot of money, a lot of talented people, because they'll just be like, well, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to put the effort in. You know, I'm going to work 5 to 8, and that's what I'm going to work. I'm not going to put in the extra hours in. What's the point? Yeah.
That reminds me a bit of the director Stanley Kubrick. Because some guy that acted in one of his films was describing in an interview at some point that he was always quite surprised or sort of impressed by how his sets work. There are so few people on set when he's recording. There are only the exact amount of people that are necessary and no one else. And you're not allowed on the set if you're not in the scene, or you're not allowed on the set if you don't have a really big job to do. And so it's a tiny team that are working really hard. And he was comparing that to another team where people are running around buying coffees and making coffees for people and giving that to all the stars and making them nice and happy. That's the opposite, where lots of people are doing the most mundane tasks all the time, and they're like hundreds of people on set, versus this tiny team of extremely hardworking people that will try and will at the end, in my opinion, get an even more meaningful result, where every single second in their film has such value because everyone's putting all of their passion and all of their energy into that.
It's the business, and the problem is, the reason I'm going back to the point Van Gaal got sacked is, in any industry, it's a very much sort of result and what you produce.
Yeah.
And if you don't produce, you know, for like Mourinho at Chelsea, he had an amazing team. And what happened was, apparently the players just stopped believing in him. They said, we don't believe in what he stands for. And the problem was, now an organisation has a problem. Does he get rid of a lot of employees, which is a lot more difficult, or do they get rid of the manager? And they had to get rid of the manager. In there, they didn't want to. And they said to, like, Mourinho, that we don't want to get rid of you, but that's the only option we've got.
far out. It is hard to be a leader, dude.
Yeah, exactly. So, but the problem, the problem Van Gaal has is the players stopped probably believing in him. So they had to get rid of him because it's impossible to get rid of 25, 30 employees. It's a lot easier to get rid of the manager.
Yeah.
And a lot of people say it is the manager's fault for like not controlling the you know, the employees. So like if it's a major chef working with under loads of cooks and they've produced something horrible, it's very much a lot the person that owns the restaurant is easier to sack the chef than the entire entire team because it's a lot harder to gain that many.
Do you manage to get paid more than the?
Well, that's the thing. Mourinho gets paid around £20 million a year.
Compared to what are the players?
Probably the top player gets paid £10 million, but that's not normal. That's because Mourinho is that kind of the name himself.
Yeah. Okay.
There's a couple, only two managers in the world that will get paid that much, compared to the, that's different because that's your own sort of personal contract agreement. So you can't really say, oh, I get paid that much. Why does he get paid that much? No, that's not a thing.
I wonder, like, if you're a good leader, I don't know if you're bored with that or you just like learn that over time.
I think you have
to. Do you know how he does it? Like, makes him believe in him and
stuff. He's the fact that he's hungry for success all the time. When you're talking about, you never say I'm enough. Whereas that goes to a point where this YouTuber has actually quit YouTube when he said that I'm enough. He doesn't want to create any more content.
Oh, who's that?
What's his name? Have you heard of Six Pack Shortcuts?
Yeah.
Mike Chang?
Yeah.
Guy, he left because he said, I'm enough. I don't want to do this anymore. And I think when
that's exactly the same thing, where he's satisfied with his results, so he's going to move on to aspiring to do something else. Because why would he continue doing a job where he's already happy? He goes in at the beginning of the day with, like, impressed.
That's a good, outlook, I reckon. If you are satisfied, there's no more reason to be there.
Once you're satisfied, that's when...
That's an amazing attitude to have, and that's where born leaders, because he's... You know, a lot of people, Mike Chang was probably not the best sort of fitness instructor, but what he was, he knew how to make money and how to really sort of present to the wider audience. But once he's done that, he's reached 3.84 million subscribers. He's made a lot of money being a personal trainer. He's like, you know what, I'm enough now. I don't want to go, because then he realizes his videos won't have the same passion that he did when he was,
when he was
trying to get to that point.
The thing I took away from this story was that he started out wanting to
be fit himself.
Yeah. That's the original gain, and then he made videos about that.
Yeah.
And so once he reached the fitness that he desired at the beginning, he stayed true to his original goal, and then he stopped. That's what I mean. Right?
That's hard, because like once you start getting money, it seems like you just stick with it.
Yeah.
It's very easy to be sort of happy with, because it's very easy for him to have just continued making videos. He was making money, whereas in the sport industry. I think if you have employees and they realize the manager is now happy, he's content. If you're working for an organization, the manager comes in, you know what? I'm happy with what you're doing. You're just going to carry on doing what you're doing. Yeah. You're not going to try and like impress him. Whereas Mourinho, apparently this player scored a hat trick and he came to him and he said, this is the worst game you've ever had. And the player's like, what? But the problem is that works. That sort of completely going at it works. Yeah. But you'll get pissed off with a manager that always does that all the time.
You know, I
and that's one of his negatives, where he does that all the time, where he's like, you know what, I'm not happy with you. When you sometimes a person can't give any more than he's already given.
Yeah.
And that was a problem.
But he only does that to motivate him, right? He doesn't actually mean that.
Yeah, but that's like the art of managing, whether you can keep that up long term.
You also have to balance it to an extent. One thing I heard somewhere was someone said that if a parent doesn't give any praise or any sort of isn't happy with the work that the child does, the child will always be trying to get satisfaction. They will always be trying to satisfy their parents, to get praise, you know. Because they never get it, that's what they desire. But if you always give them praise, if you're always like, this is great, they won't want it, you know. You want what you can't get. And if you can't get your parents' satisfaction, then that's the thing you want. And so you'll see that a lot, like people that kind of completely hate their parents because they were nasty parents. Deep down, they still somehow want to prove them wrong or prove them right.
But interestingly, with a manager in the media world anyway, Mourinho and many great managers that have, that are in the sport industry, they will be like that with their employees and their players, where they're like, you know, I'm not happy with you. But when a player's not having a good time, where he's not performing to the level and the media's getting onto their back, he will protect that player to his own detriment. He He will. What he does is when if a team his team plays bad, he says something outrageous on the thing. He's saying, "Oh, the referee's against us. The organization is against us."
Oh, really?
You know? And so he does is divert the attention from the team to himself. So everyone's like, "Oh, what? You know, that's disgraceful." Yeah. He's had so many fines because like he pokes like other manager's eyes. You know, like he does those things.
It's like
away from the team to reduce the pressure.
That's sort of a good manager in a little ways.
It reminds me of like the Big Brother. Younger brother thing where you've got sort of you as the older brother are the one that's allowed to make fun of and be annoying to your younger brother, but one as soon as someone else does it you're like, hey, you can't do that. I'm the only one that's allowed to do that. So as soon as the reporters are saying that the player is terrible or people are going around saying that the player is terrible, that's when he comes in and says, no, they're not. I'm the only one that's allowed to say to the player that they're terrible.
It's a huge mental game, isn't it? And like, being a manager, that's kind of cool because like he knows when to pick on a player and when to like leave him.
The
and,
reason
like,
he's probably the only he's the first manager to ever make himself into a product himself. So normally the players are the superstars, and the way he did that, he won the European Cup with a team that had literally no budget. So he won major competition, and then he left that team because he said he always leaves the team when he's won everything with them. That when he's won the Champions League, he leaves. He's like, that's it. Never achieved that because you realize he can't drive the players on more. So when he left them and he joined another team in the press conference, he came to England for the first time and they were questioning him, saying, "Are you ready?" And he's like, "You know, I'm not." This is like that's where his nickname came from. He was like, "I'm not just one of the bottle. I'm not just one of these average managers that are in the league. I'm like the special one." And that's when his name came, the special one. And he's like, he kept that.
That's so cool.
And everyone just like,
you gotta be a little bit cocky.
He's just got the most arrogant sort of outlook. He's like, you know what? I don't care what this manager says. What has he won?
What has
he won compared to me?
Yeah.
Look what I've done and look what that guy's done.
Yeah, definitely.
If people do look up to those kind of authoritarian, simple-minded people. They're like, I'm clearly better than this. Look at that. Blah, blah, blah. That kind of rhetoric, it resonates with a lot of people. They're like, wow, this man is awesome. Yeah. This guy is really cool. That's why like Donald Trump is doing great.
Yeah.
Because he just stands around sort of saying how great he's doing and how much he's gonna beat Hillary Clinton once he gets the chance. And that's all, and he's so simple with the way he talks and everything. Yeah. Everyone would love to look up to that kind of figure.
It's starting a new tradition where before that in the sport industry the managers used to be the people that used to be very calm, they used to talk to the media very well. But when you see him his interview, if you ever see him interview, you'll see his eyes, they're always like thinking of something to say.
Yeah.
And like a psychiatrist said that this guy is always thinking. When he's in the limelight, is the game starts before the game in the press conference and the game ends when the post like the conference is finished.
Jesus.
So he's always in the mind of the other team. He's always saying little things that'll just annoy the other team. There was a game where his team won the game and they didn't have a single shot on goal.
Yeah.
Basically what happened was he's against Pep Guardiola, Barcelona, Champions League semi-final.
Yeah.
And this is like one of the biggest games of the season and then one of their players gets sent off, wrongly so. And the other team's the dugout was celebrating. They were like, get in there, they were celebrating. And what he did, he walked over to the other team's manager and he said, it's not over. And when the game finished and they'd won, he literally ran around the pitch just doing that. And literally there was like, you know, and then the sprinklers came on. So the team that ran, they turned the sprinklers on. And they asked in the game, what do you think? They disrespected you. They said, the other players, my players left blood on the pitch. That's why they're washing the blood away.
Jesus.
So he's like, he's got the answer. Like, you have to be a quick thinker. You can't just be like, you know, you can't think. He's always thinking. And that's why, you know, he's like considered one of the best managers in the world. Because his game style is not brilliant. The way he plays is, again, very defensive most of the time.
Okay.
But, you know, that's why Man United have got him. Because, you know, one of the biggest clubs in the world, one of the biggest managers in the world.
Yep, of course.
Seemingly best. You know, you've got an amazing organisation, money, everything.
Yeah. Dude, that's someone you want to lead you, though. Come on.
Yeah. That's why every player, when a team comes in for him.
Yeah.
Like, there's an amazing story with this footballer. They said that, what happened, like, how did you come to sign for this team? And he got a phone call for his home number. Yeah. And the guy said, it's Jose Mourinho. And he just went, fuck off. No, you're not. And he's like, no. And you have to, like, convince him that he's actually Jose Mourinho. And then literally, like, he just broke down. He's like, shit.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely you want that guy to, like, be leading you.
Yeah.
Someone cocky.
Because you realise that he will not let, you know, he will never throw you under the bus.
Yeah, exactly.
And that was actually his last interview under Chelsea, was he said, the players betrayed me. And that's when Chelsea realised that there's, like...
Why did he say that?
Because he said, what I'm saying to the players to do, they're not doing it on the pitch.
Oh,
and he said that in the press conference, and the Chelsea hierarchy thought, you know, that he's lost it. You know, he's
he's no longer made like
the
like
manager of the team,
defending the team,
yeah.
defending their thing.
He's throwing them under the bus, yeah. And then they realize that there's the only other option they've got now is, and it was an amazing thing. Apparently, like it could be like. When he leaves the team, you can see the players, they're crying, they're, you know, they're giving, like, you know, and he's crying as well, because if he's got that he's got this amazing sort of, because he gets almost that everyone's against us.
Yep, yep, and then he's leaving, yep,
yeah.
like, wow.
Yeah.
He keeps, like, an awesome camaraderie type.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But again, like, this has happened from, like, a long, like, you know, you're only as good as your last battle. So when there was a general of an army, he might have won many wars. If he loses his last war, you're just considered utter shit. Tiny.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, he's lost the last war. And most of the times when the general loses his army, the only you can't change the army. You have to, you know, get rid of the general himself.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what he is. So the general, he's like the manager of a sports team, is the main guy.
Yeah, that's
the guy that really controlled.
Mm. Damn.
That's interesting.
It's I don't get into football, dude.
I was just, whilst you were talking about, like, he's constantly thinking, whatever,
yeah.
I was like, oh, what kind of personality type would he have? And I just looked it up, and most people think he's an ENTJ, which is basically the leader type.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought that's pretty cool, because that's, for example, Steve Jobs is most people think he's also an ENTJ. And that reminded me of how he, at the advent of the sort of Mac and Windows, how he completely fucked up the company. Because he was acting almost like a manager. He had this ethos of everyone's against us. He created one project, which was the Apple Lisa, where he wanted to make the first graphical, not the first, but a really good graphical user interface computer.
Mm.
But it was far too expensive. They were putting the top of the line technology in it. No one was ever going to buy it.
Yeah, sure.
But then, sort of, that was not going too well, so he abandoned that, but that project continued running in the background, and he went and started up the new project, which was the Macintosh project.
Sure.
And he did that one where they were trying to do the same stuff with less electronics in it. And there were... And he created an internal sort of conflict between those two teams. You had the Lisa team and you had the Macintosh team that were literally like football teams against each other. Like, no, well, this one's better, that one's better. And he kind of endorsed that behavior where they became kind of these competitive rivals or whatever. He liked it. But everyone at the top, everyone that was actually the CEO of the company at the time, and all the boards of managers, they were like, we don't like this behavior.
But like,
he's fucking up the company from the inside because... He actually wanted it to have conflict.
Again,
he wanted that to stir up and create competition.
Yeah, but that's the best way. But an example with like a manager like Mourinho is when he leaves the team, he normally leaves the team in absolute disarray. Whereas players are like, you know, because the way he works them to 100%, he actually thins out the squad, so he's very less players. He doesn't have a massive squad. Whereas when, like, comparing with that Cook, he doesn't have like loads of like a team full of, you know, that just carries a coffee. He has a very small team.
Yeah.
So what happens is when another manager comes in, he's like, these players are so tired all the time because all they've been doing for the last 2-3 years is running their asses off this guy.
Oh,
so
okay.
The team, and the fact that he's created so much conflict, the media hates, like, the club, there's a massive sort of, because he's created that.
So
that's
one
of the reasons why,
the media hates him,
when he was at Real Madrid, considered the biggest football team in the world,
yeah.
He did not do as well, because they had the best players in the world, and when he was trying to, like, poke the best players, Cristiano Ronaldo, if you're trying to poke him, he's just like, no. You know?
Yeah,
So that's one of the negatives of a manager like that, when they poke... And the hierarchy, the hierarchy in Madrid are like, we don't like the way he's behaving, you know, poking other managers, you know, saying these things in press conference. We don't want that. We want a manager that's a yes man, basically, that just controls everything.
Yeah.
There's the talent, just control it, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, keep the players happy.
So, like, a guy like him wouldn't be able to handle, like, talented individuals.
He can, that's one, but, like, it's hard for him in that. At the moment, he's not proved that he can do it long term.
Yes, okay.
Okay, let's do an ending. Who wants to do an ending? Who hasn't
Suresh.
Done an ending yet?
Suresh, end it, man.
Alright, I'll end it. See. Alright, so that was the Red Switch podcast with me, Bart, Adamia, and Oiva. Hope you guys enjoyed, and we'll get back to you next time. Cheers.
you get to Australia through a black hole?
Definitely.
What the fuck?
Can you black hole a black hole?
Can you penetrate a black hole?
Asking the real questions there, man. And would that be a sex offence?
That was gay. That was gay.
Well, I'm not bringing a gender of the black hole into this. That might be female, might be male.
I was just talking about space. Do you want gender?
Sometimes
you when you speak of a hole, the black hole, that's kind of like, you know.
Yeah. You know, something that has a lot of mass and Schwarzschild radius.
That's the brown hole.
Oh! Oh, man!
Come on, mate.